There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
Still, that is not a question, but it's a commentary. By the way, welcome to Midday Mobile, hour number two on this Monday. Live local talk over the hour, 343-0106. That's for the text line and the phone line. Put you through to the show. Maybe you can text in some questions for my buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. And the source of our discussions of state news and what's going on in Washington. And right now I'll say, what's going on, Todd? Well, I've got, first of all, before we go any further, last hour I had State Senator Cam Ward on the show announcing he's running for Alabama Supreme Court Place 1. That's something that if people would have been subscribers over there and would tell people how they can get the email, which is non-subscription, but if they've been subscribers, they would have found out about that pretty early.
Yeah, in fact, that was sort of rumored last week, and we had some well-placed sources that said, hey, look, Cam Ward, he, you know, state senator from Shelby County, been rumored to maybe be a candidate for a lot of different things over the years. I mean, he talked about running for AG, talked about maybe lieutenant governor or one day even governor, but it's been known for a while that he wanted to pursue something statewide. And, you know, our folks told us, look, the timing is just right. You know, he's got a free shot. He doesn't have to risk his Senate seat to run. He's been working on this prison reform, criminal justice reform stuff that's given him a higher profile than a lot of other state senators would have. And so, yeah, they're confident. They feel like the timing is right for him to make this move to a statewide race. Now, look, it's going to be a primary. It's not an open seat by any means. So I'm interested to see just how this primary shapes up, but already he's made a pretty big splash.
Talk to us about that seat, place one. Who's there? Who's got the job right now?
This is Associate Justice Greg Shaw. Now, he's been on the judiciary for a long time, formerly was on the Court of Criminal Appeals, ran for Supreme Court first time in 2008, won that seat and has won re-election. You know, these are six-year terms. And so this would be his second re-election to the Supreme Court if he decides to run. And Brian Lyman and Mary Sell are both reporting that Justice Greg Shaw does intend to run again. He's not trying to sit this one out by any means. So at the moment, it looks like, you know, Cam Ward versus Greg Shaw for place one on Supreme Court. It sets up really in what could have been kind of an off year for state office. It sets up a pretty interesting primary in a statewide election.
You know, it's one, though, that's going to be harder, I think, for voters, for we the voters, to educate ourselves on, being that when you deal with the judicial branch, you know, you look at it at the legislative side, and we kind of all know talking points and why, you know, one person's going to tell you they need the office, somebody else needs the office. On the judicial side, being one of nine, do you go specifically to their decision on some case, or how do you, if you're running that campaign, and this is something you're not naive to, how would you run a campaign against somebody on the Alabama Supreme Court?
Well, look, there's probably not much daylight between Greg Shaw and Cam Ward on the big issues that people care about, you know, the big issues like abortion and gun rights and things like that. But, you know, the Alabama Supreme Court rarely deals with those kind of questions. A lot of it is adjudication of criminal cases that finally make their way up. So it is, you know, it's very much more of an administrative court than some kind of high-minded, or we're deciding between, you know, whether or not, you know, a gun law will be upheld or an abortion law. Typically, those things are always in the federal courts. I'll just say this. Races for the court in Alabama a lot of times aren't even about issues as much as they are about which group is backing whom. And that, a lot of times that comes down to the trial lawyers versus business interests. You know, when it comes to torts and things like that, if you go back to the 90s, remember Alabama being called a tort hell?
Mm-hmm.
And, even through the 2000s, there's always been a tension between the trial lawyers, the folks that, you know, make their bones off of getting the decisions, you know, court decisions, lawsuits, things like that, and the business community. Now, look, everybody knows there has to be a balance. We have to have courts that, you know, hear a fair argument from a litigant, but that can also go too far. So when I think about the Supreme Court, I think about the trial lawyers versus the business community. I don't know which camp is where right now, but that's the thing to really look for if you want to be an informed voter.
Now, you look through the members of the Supreme Court. I mean, Alabama, conservative state, so do trial lawyers try to find a Republican that is at least somewhat open to their concerns, or do you run?
Yeah.
How do you find somebody? If you're the trial lawyers, how do you find somebody who carries, and not carries your water is not fair, who signs with your worldview, but at the same time can get elected?
Well, you know, that's a great question. The trial lawyers, now they call themselves the Alabama Association for Justice, right? So they've kind of done some rebranding. And, you know, they've done a good job of rebranding themselves, of sort of recasting themselves in a Republican state. I mean, years ago, they wouldn't even spoken to a Republican about tort issues and things like that. And a Republican wouldn't have ever accepted contributions from the trial lawyers. Well, to exist in Alabama today politically, you have to talk to Republicans. So they've actually done a really good job of rebranding themselves, repositioning themselves in this Republican world. But absolutely, they look for Republicans in office. I mean, look no further than Roy Moore. You know, Roy Moore, as I know that he is kind of seen as, you know, the most conservative ever on all these issues. When it came to tort issues, he was absolutely friendly with the trial lawyers. He was kind of their candidate for a long time. So, but how many people outside of the political bubble could have told you that? You
know, seven in the entire state. That's the thing I'm talking about. When people are trying to become informed voters, this is not kitchen table stuff.
No, but that's what it comes down to. That, you know, these tort issues, these businesses versus the trial lawyers, that's what it comes down to. And again, I think there should be a great balance and fairness in our court system, but that's who generally is at, you know, at going against each other in these races. So we'll see. The only way to really see that, nobody's going to talk openly about how much they love the trial lawyers or something like that, or how much they're going to use the courts to, you know, screw the trial. That's not what they do, but watch their contribution sheets. That's what you do. You watch and see who takes money from which group, and you know, that's how you know whose horse is whose.
We'll talk more about that when we come back. I got a suggestion. You want to keep up with that kind of stuff, you need to get the email from Alabama Daily News in your inbox each morning at 6 days a week now. Got a weekend update as well from Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Todd will tell us how to do that. Also, we will talk about Democrats in Alabama. And while we're on a Supreme Court vibe, maybe the Supreme Court, the big one, like the one in Washington, and what they're going to be looking at in session this year.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, 120 FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Talking with our buddy Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com, the website. And if you'd like to get that email in your inbox each, 6 days a week now, Todd, how do they do that?
Yeah, it's really easy. Just go to aldailynews.com. That's the homepage. And right at the top, you'll see a button that says subscribe. Just push that, enter your name and your email. There's no cost at all. It's a free newsletter that goes out every morning. you'll be on the list. We look forward to having you as a subscriber. And yeah, we have a weekend digest edition. It comes out on Sunday afternoon just to kind of catch you up. It used to be it was the Sunday morning paper, you know. Mm-hmm. But these days, the way the news trends are, it's almost like Sunday afternoon after church, after lunch, people kind of settle in and say, all right, what did I miss? So yeah. The Weekend Digest is really popular.
You know, when I opened up Weekend Digest yesterday afternoon, or actually evening, right, well, before dinner. So I got it before dinner. I was looking at the number one story on here, and I'm like, this is like all I want to talk about. I know people don't want to focus on this. They're elsewhere, but I'm telling you, to me, it seems like the feud going on in amongst the Alabama Democrat Party is like Days of Our Lives. Todd, this is talk about what's happening. Are they going to be at the convention this year? Will Alabama even be represented? Hey, Todd, you back with us? I think he's back with us.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
there you go. We lost you for a second. Did Nancy Worley just cut your internet? Is that what happened?
It's a fascinating feud.
Talk about it. Okay.
It really is a fascinating feud. My apologies for my audio troubles. It's just really interesting. You know, you've got a group of people who are longtime bosses in the Democratic Party who just want to keep the power. And it is the reason why it's hard to understand for most of us is why fight it this hard? You know, is there money involved? What's the real interest involved? But all anybody can figure is that Joe Reed and Nancy Worley, who have been controlling state party for a long time, especially Joe Reed, just don't want to give that power up. But now it looks like they're going to be forced to eventually. So this new Democratic Executive Committee met over the weekend. They did what the DNC told them to do and voted to adopt bylaws. Now look, Worley and Reed and the old guys, they say that doesn't count. It's not legitimate. But I think the writing's on the wall. I think, I don't know when it's going to happen, but at some point, you're going to have the DNC just basically, allow these guys, credentials to the committee floor, things like that, and eventually they'll win the day. I just don't know when.
Okay, let me do this. I'm going to frame it for Republicans listening who can't understand it. Can you imagine your reaction if you're a card-carrying Republican and Alabama would not be represented at the convention, that there would be the chairs sitting there in the area where the Republican, the great state of Alabama, and there'd be no one there? It has gotten to that point. I mean, the wheels have come off Alabama Democrat Party. No wonder that they're making this move, this power play, this coup d'etat that needs, I argue this from the outside, not a Democrat, but this needs to be made. This move needs to be made.
Well, yeah, and look who's leading the effort, or at least he's up front and center during the effort, and that's Representative Chris England. Mm-hmm. Now, this is a state representative from Tuscaloosa who's been around a while. He's probably been his third or fourth term in legislature. So he's seen the Democrats have control, and now he sees Republicans having control. He's been through the fire of these elections and knows that the Democratic Party is not giving any support to Democrats up or down the ballot. Doug Jones had to do his own thing, right? He didn't have any support from the Alabama Democratic Party. They had to basically form their own grassroots thing. And so Chris England's saying, it's hard enough to be a Democrat and get elected these days in Alabama. It's not any easier when you have zero party organization and they're just letting it fall apart. So I think it's significant you're seeing some of these legislative Democrats go against the party that they've belonged to for a long time. It shows you just how much it matters to have that grassroots support, to have that fundraising support. It's been non-existent for two terms now, and they want it back.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting to see if they are successful in this, because England and the others have the support of the national. I mean, it's like the National Democrat Party recognizes them, but in between them is the actual head of the Alabama Democrat Party in Reed and Worley. I mean, it's a strange deal, man. It really is.
It is, and I don't think it's really going to have much of an impact on this next election. Right, I mean, you get the Doug Jones versus we don't really know whoever the nominee for the Republicans is going to be, but I don't think this spat is going to have a whole lot of impact on that. I think Doug Jones is going to have to make his own grassroots thing again, which they'll have no problem doing, given all the resources they have. So this is more about the future. You never know the dynamics and how they change for the future, but you've got to start somewhere. And so it's been interesting to see, really, for the last year, this group of sort of younger Democrats, more progressive, maybe you might think, just not stuck in the past, saying, "Look, we want a legitimate party. We may not." I think we're going to take over the legislature or anything like that, but we want a fighting chance in swing districts. And so, yeah, kicking these old guys out is certainly better for their success.
All right. I want to grab a couple other subjects here before we finish up. Number one here, you mentioned it, and you talked about Doug Jones, got me thinking about the Senate race. I may, and I can't speak for you, I don't know where you are, I may be the, at least on the talk show host side, the last one in the state that has not called the race already for Tommy Tuberville. It seems like everybody else who does what I do in the other cities has already called it for Tuberville. I'm gonna sit back and wait.
Well, I think that's probably wise. Look, you got to remember, it is October. The election is in March. Sure, that's you know, not too far away, but there's a lot. As we say, you know, in sports, there's a lot of baseball to be played. There's a lot of campaigning. Think about this. Nobody's run a single TV ad. Nobody has run, to my knowledge, a single radio ad. There might be some digital stuff out there, but I haven't seen anything. So the real air war that always defines these elections hasn't even begun yet. So look, and you know, we were first to report that poll last week that, you know, Tuberville has sustained his lead and even grown it, if you believe the numbers. There's no question about that. He's winning the race. I guess my point would be the race really hasn't begun when not a single ad has been aired. So I'm holding my horses just like you, because it's easy to be a prisoner of the moment. You know, it's easy to just to get caught up in, well, this poll's out here, this poll's out here. But if, you know, we've all seen elections where the polls didn't match up with the final result, and especially when it's this early, man. Let's hold our horses and really let the race play out.
You know, and this is anecdotal, but for what it's worth, and it's good to get it to your ears with what you do with state discussion of state politics, is I've had farmers, this is anecdotal, friends of mine that are farmers, listeners that are farmers, have come to me and said, hey, first of all, it was a close ballot. Second of all, I wouldn't ask my opinion on who, you know, as an Alabama farmer, I support. You know, the Alabama Farmers Federation did, but these are farmers from Southwest Alabama who say Bradley Byrne has done a lot for them as he, in his role as congressman. So, you know, saying that the goose is cooked on this, and maybe it's not.
Look, the Alpha endorsement, Alabama Farmers Federation endorsement for Tuberville was a really big deal. In my opinion, The most significant thing about it is it legitimized him beyond sort of the name ID sort of, you know, fringe. Okay, well, we know who he is. That's why we're responding to a poll this way. It made him more legitimate with, you know, established groups that really care about elections. So it was I cannot discount the importance of that.
Agreed.
Endorsement. It was also a huge disappointment for Bradley Byrne, because what you said, he's been there for the Farmers Federation, been voting on ag issues all these years, and then, you know, this guy that hasn't ever been elected gets the nomination or gets the endorsement. So it's tough. It's tough to get that. So, you know, for Byrne's campaign, you got to keep your head down. You know, that was a disappointment, but press forward. And I still think he's going to make a race of it. Look at all the resources he has. Wait, look at the organization he has. They just announced, while we've been doing this interview, 67 people in every county that are going to be their leadership team. I don't think any campaign could come close to naming that kind of organization. So, yeah, it's early yet. Tuberville is clearly winning, but I would just argue that the race really hasn't begun. And you know, look for the next couple of months for those ads to start running, and then we'll really see kind of who's responding to what and how voters are really responding.
All right. Before we run out of time, remind folks once again, because I want them to go read, you know, Supreme Court Day 1, 2, read that story and everything else in the emails, how they get signed up.
It's real easy. Just aldailynews.com. Click subscribe, enter your name and your email, no cost at all, but we'd be glad to have you on the list and look forward to having you on the Alabama Daily News subscriber list.
All right, Todd, as always, thank you so much. We'll check back with you soon.
All right, Sean, be good.
There you go. Todd Stacey, Alabama Daily News, aldailynews.com. Always a pleasure to talk with him. All right, seeing some text about this. What Todd mentioned, I saw it as well. This came out, it says, 200-plus leaders from all 67 Alabama counties, Team Byrne, and they have a video here where they list the volunteers in all the counties. That's grassroots. That's important. Do I think that means Congressman Byrne runs away with this? No, I don't. I guess the contrarian nature when everybody else, I say everybody else, but three of them that I talk with a good bit that do what I do here in other cities, they've all but already given the election to Tommy Tuberville. I don't know. Like Todd said, there's a lot of baseball still to play. Talk about that when we get back with you at 343-0106.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 1065. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Hey, by the way, show note for Midday Mobile, on the road on Wednesday, on the road on a ship, we're back to the Fantail of the USS Alabama at Battleship Memorial Park. It is, in all the years of doing radio, my favorite place to do a show is there. So I get to do it again this coming Wednesday. We'll do an hour of Midday Mobile, and then Tom and Cal and the Scuttlebutt crew will take over at 1 o'clock. Come see us out at Battleship. We'll be physically on the Battleship with the FM Talk 106.5 Mobile Command Unit. You'll see us there on the Fantail. Come by and say hello. I'll bring some of those, the new run of FM Talk 106.5 Huggers out. We'll hook you up with those. You can stop by and say hello on Wednesday. All right, a couple things. We're going to get the Supreme Court stuff in a second, because I got a quick rundown of the cases that they will be looking at with the Supreme Court. But before I do, let me, Dalton, I want you to listen to this, and then I can screenshot this. Maybe I can do a screenshot and then tweet them next to each other. Okay. So, Senator Ted Cruz, right? So, three tweets from Senator Cruz. First one, 6 minutes ago. Defeating, and we're talking about what we mentioned this morning, the pullout of U.S. troops from northern Syria there. We're working in conjunction with the Kurds. Okay, so the first tweet from Senator Cruz, defeating ISIS and destroying their so-called caliphate was, past tense, y'all, was a major victory. And the president is right to want to bring our soldiers home. We don't leave our troops in foreign theaters forever, but we still have major national security interests in Syria. Okay, that's his first one. So it was a victory, okay? But then he goes on to say, we cannot allow ISIS to return. Right now, some 15,000 ISIS fighters remain in Iraq and Syria, and the, is it Idlib province, which is a province in Syria right up against the Turkish border, which has a higher concentration of terrorists than any other location in the last 40 years. That's saying something. And then his most recent tweet here, it would also be disgraceful, capitalized, if we sat idly by while Turkey slaughters the Kurds. I agree, Senator Cruz. As public reports suggest, the Turkish leaders, Erdogan, explicitly told President Trump he intends to do. That is, think about having that on your conscience. Who wants to be president? My gosh. Once again, he said that Erdogan explicitly told President Trump he intends to slaughter the Kurds. And Senator Cruz goes on to say, Kurds risked their lives for many years to fight alongside of us. So I'm with Senator Cruz in everything except the beginning where he says, well, it's a victory. Yeah, I feel it has been, we've had great success in the battles against ISIS. But for him to say it was a major victory and then to turn around and say, you have the highest concentration of terrorists in that location than any other location in the last 40 years, it seems... seems contrary, doesn't it, to you? I agree with the tenet, or just the spirit of what Senator Cruz is saying. I too, would worry about the Kurds have been like the only ones we can even halfway trust. in that region. But they don't control, they're not a member of NATO, they don't have their own nation, and they don't themselves, they control oil-producing regions, but they don't have their own autonomy. That's why they're not there. I've suggested you make a Kurdistan, and you put Kurdistan in NATO and kick Turkey out. But nobody's listening to me. But if what happens if, and you heard the president earlier told, is announced that if this slaughter of the Kurds goes through, he's going to personally wreck the Turkish economy. The blood hate that goes on in that part of the world, you know, is ask groups that have been slaughtered by different groups over there over time. And I mean, think about the Turks are no new players in hating entire ethnic groups. And so if it's true, and you got Senator Cruz saying that Erdogan, Turkish leader, told President Trump he intends to slaughter the Kurds. And this is truly bothersome. Truly bothersome. As much as I don't want us involved in these issues, we are. And it takes some of this, of course, to secure peace at home. But if we have somebody that has been an ally of our country who has stood up and been, like I said, the most, it doesn't mean they're 100% trustworthy. They had their own interests, sure. But more than other groups in that region, they have been somebody we can rely on. And now the Turks aren't saying, like, oh, well, we'll be fair with them. That if this account from Ted Cruz is true, they're saying, hey, by the way, we're going to go in there and slaughter those Kurds. Nothing to see here. We're going to go slaughter those Kurds. So y'all, you know, just we're letting you know. What? Hey, we'll see with more on this. But, I mean, the president coming out and saying that he will personally wreck their economy. But still, that's not at the level of... All right. We'll talk about something less contentious, like the cases facing the Supreme Court this year. As Supreme Court back in session. Does anybody have a reaction to that? That you have Turkey saying, hey, yeah, y'all pulling out, and we're going to go slaughter those Kurds. And we still pull out? Why? As much as I'm excited about getting our men and women home out of those theaters, why? You know, Turkey, a NATO ally, a member of NATO, is saying, if this is what the account from Senator Cruz is true, a member of NATO is told our nation that they're going to go slaughter the Kurds. Which nobody cares. All right. So what's on the docket for Supreme Court this year? There's quite a few cases, but we'll pick a few of these that are going to get a lot of talk out there. It'll be the abortion issue and the gun issue. Of course, those are pretty much perennials around that. This is the first place that the disagreement could become apparent is on abortion. And this story from NPR, because the only people that don't paywall this thing, is a case that asked the court to essentially reverse a 2016 decision that struck down a Texas law making it very difficult for clinics that perform abortions to exist. And now the Supreme Court has agreed to hear arguments in a case that presents a nearly identical law from Louisiana. Goldstein, who frequently argues cases before the court, expects the conservative court majority to eventually reverse Roe versus Wade outright, or to hollow it out. This was a big push against Kavanaugh from the left. This guy Goldstein, at least according to this guy, this is one guy talking, said it's coming, he says, but nobody knows whether it's in 1 year, 5 years, or maybe 10. All right, then from abortion to Second Amendment rights, at a time when voters seem to approve of more gun regulation, the court seems headed the opposite direction. Maybe because they're sticking with the Constitution, NPR. Before the court is the first major test of gun regulations in more than 10 years since the justices ruled that there's a constitutional right to own a gun for self-defense in one's home. That's the Heller case. Court observers have long attributed the hiatus on gun cases to a closely divided court on which neither the four conservatives nor four liberals were sure how Justice Kennedy would cast his deciding vote. But now Kennedy is retired, replaced by Kavanaugh, who, as a lower judge, was an outspoken critic of gun regulations and a strong supporter of expansive gun rights. Okay, so there's your abortion and guns, you know, perennials, they're on there. This one's interesting. It'll bring up some talk. Can an employer fire an employee because he is gay? Here's the case. They said the court's going to hear a case that tests whether employers are free to fire gay employees because of their sexual orientation or trans employees because of their gender identity. In the 1964 Civil Rights Act, it bars discrimination in employment, quote, because of sex, end quote. The fired employees contend that the language protects them from such discharges. The employers argued that the law was never meant to cover gay or transgender employees. A victory for the LGBTQ community would be huge, said Georgetown University law professor Paul Smith, who notes that discrimination against gays and trans individuals remains rampant, especially in the private sector. So this will be whether you can fire somebody for being gay or trans, I guess. Who puts that down? Because here, let's get away from the idealistic and talk about the pragmatic for a second. How many times... Obviously, they found some case here because it's going to the Supreme Court. But how many times is somebody that would fire somebody for that going to say, if cause for termination, gay? Really? You see, I mean, they're gonna pass a law that is not probably necessary because there's people. Nobody's going to write the termination because they're gay. Also on their list of items before the court, it is the question of the executive right and presidential power and impeachment. All right. On the SCOTUS blog out there, they said multiple cases are on rocket ships heading towards the Supreme Court. Goldstein, who's the editor of SCOTUS blog, says it's because the president has been so aggressive in asserting his immunity from investigations, whether they are criminal investigations, subpoenas for his financial records, or potentially records relating to impeachment inquiry. The court, as Goldstein observes, is going to hate the idea of tackling these cases in a presidential election year, but they may not have a way out. So there's some of the cases that they're going to be looking at in this session of the Supreme Court. All right, coming right back. More of Midday Mobile on FM Talk 106.5.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Hey, if you're going to be up in the Birmingham area, you want to see Trump Jr. Saw that note, Donald Trump Jr. is going to be in Birmingham November 7th for a meet and greet for his upcoming book, Triggered. Should be interesting. Trump Jr. said he's looking forward to coming to Birmingham to spend time with some of the most patriotic Americans in the country, end quote. So there you go. That's November 7th, if you're going to be up there. All right, a little bit more on this issue with Syria. And the president talking about on Twitter getting out of foreign entanglements, I get it. I mean, that's part of the lost campaign platform of President Trump. One that I talked about many times when he hired John Bolton. I said, wait a second. We're trying to change things, right? And yet Bolton out. But if you remember, President Trump, when he was campaigning, talked about not having the United States as the world's policeman, not having us, you know, in every foreign entanglement or whatever it would be. And then when Bolton came in, I went, oh my gosh, really? So with that being said, and to paraphrase the president saying something to the effect of, we're going to get out of these tribal conflicts all over the planet and only go to war and war to win, like when it's in the interest of the United States. And that's a paraphrase there. I don't have the quote in front of me. I get that. I get that, and I appreciate that. That's one of the things I thought was refreshing, because Hillary Clinton would have been more the same. I get that. But in this specific instance, this is not a new engagement for the country, but it's wrapping up an old one. When you have Erdogan say, the leader of Turkey, if this is true, and I mean, you got Ted Cruz quoting it, and I don't think Ted Cruz is going to go, report something that's not backed up somewhere like this. I mean, Ted Cruz has not been, you know, the last couple of years, he's not been much of a thorn in the president's side. He's been an ally of the president's. And for him to say public reports suggesting Turkish leader Erdogan explicitly told President Trump he intends to slaughter the Kurds when we pull out. If that is true, that's just at least a sick place in my stomach there. As much as I want us out, and there will be eventually a day that somebody has to do it themselves and we're not going to be there. But for Turkey, a member of NATO, which has bothered me for a long time because of stuff like this, to say, hey, by the way, when y'all pull out, we're going to go in there and slaughter some Kurds. You cool with that? Well, here, that's my take on it. Here's Bob Constantini from Westwood One with probably a more astute version of that.
A Republican on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee, Marco Rubio, seems stunned by the announcement from the president. Rubio tweeting, if reports about U.S. retreat in Syria are accurate, the Trump administration has made a grave mistake that will have implications far beyond Syria. The deal Mr. Trump has with Turkey's President Erdogan would have American forces leaving northeastern Syria, letting Turkey move in to hold ISIS prisoners and perhaps attack Kurdish militias that helped the U.S. rout the terrorist group. Mr. Trump put his rationale in one tweet. It is time for us to get out of these ridiculous endless wars, many of them tribal, and bring our soldiers home. We will fight where it is to our benefit and only fight to win. That last sentence all in caps. Bob Costantini, the White House.
All right, there's the quote. There's the tweet I wanted. Thank you, Bob Costantini. So the fact that brashness, let's look beyond this. Even what President Trump's decision here is, let's look at, we have a member of NATO. Pick another NATO country, and if they would say, hey, by the way, when y'all get out of wherever it is, we're going to go in and slaughter those people. What if Iceland? Do they have an army? But if they send Bjork in there to, I mean, what if, I mean, look at the European countries that are in NATO. Can you imagine one of them saying, yeah, y'all need to pull back, and when y'all do, we'll probably try to round up some of those ISIS folks, but while we're at it, kill the heck out of the Kurds. People would lose their minds. And here we go with this. We'll see what comes of this, but it's extremely bothersome that it would be, it's... that they would say that. Okay, let's look at it there. Even if you don't care, you don't give a hill of beans about it, isn't that disrespectful? And obviously, I'm trying to work towards the angle of I don't want the Kurds slaughtered, okay? But let me take not idealistic, but a pragmatic argument. Would you allow that kind of disrespect? That is disrespect to the United States. The people that were allies of the United States there, Erdogan saying, yeah, by the way, when y'all leave, we're going to kill them. Yeah, and Ben asked a good question. Ben, this is a fair question. So how long are troops supposed to stay in these countries where they want to kill each other? Great question. That's what the president's working off of. And like I said, when he was campaigning and talking about getting us out of foreign entanglements, not being the world's policeman, I think he got a lot of cheers when he hired John Bolton. I said, what the? But now Bolton's gone. I get what you're saying, Ben, but in this case, this specific case, you have a NATO member country, first of all, saying that they're going to slaughter the people that stood beside us. I mean, my solution has been one that's probably impossible to happen, but like I've said, I believe that Iraq should have been split and the Kurds should have had their own country in the north. It should have been Kurdistan. It should have been an autonomous country. And we would have had a fantastic ally in that region, people we could trust, right? Of course, we wouldn't dare do that because the Turks, they're not going to allow a Kurdistan on their border. And now, beyond that, then they're saying publicly they're going to go slaughter the Kurds. These are the people that stood with us. I mean, I want our men and women home, too, and you know me. I've talked about this for years. But you can, in a situation where somebody was your ally and stood with you, right, you have to land this plane a little more gracefully than leaving people on, especially if you know there's the Turks are out there saying that they're going to slaughter. Yeah, Bob, I agree. Bob, and this is the same thing I was thinking about earlier. Bob says, let's not forget the Armenian genocide where the Turks slaughtered all kinds of people back in the day. The Turks are, Bob, in this case, the Turks are telling us now. It's not just happening. It's not in the hazy past. It's in 2019, and they're saying, by the way, we're going to go slaughter those people. Hopefully something gets fixed on this. All right. We'll do it again tomorrow for Mobile Morning starting at 6. Remember, podcast of all the shows we do right here at FM Talk 106.5. All these live, local produced hours of shows are available for you in podcast form, front page of our website. Just click the podcast tab. Subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher. You can get them at Spotify if you're listening to your tunes over there, or podcasts are there as well, and TuneIn Radio. So check it out. All right, Paul Feinbaum. I can't wait to listen to Paul today after a big weekend in football. Feinbaum on the way next. See you in the morning.
A fine Cabernet is a drink, but not all drinks are a fine